The visit of the Magi. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and the teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet was written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be a shepherd for my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I may go and worship him." After they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. Then, having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route.
Well, good morning. You look very few today and very far away, so please feel free to move forward if you fancy filling up some of the front seats. So as you can see, Gary has delegated again. Now, as most of you know, Andrew and I were lucky enough to have had an incredible trip to Australia back in November. And I'd never particularly wanted to go to Australia because I'd heard so much about all the things that could kill you. So I was imagining a place full of poisonous spiders and snakes just waiting to bite me, and an ocean full of nasty creatures waiting for me to step on them, which meant I'd never get far enough out to be eaten by a shark. But the reality, of course, was very different. I discovered that Australia is a very beautiful land full of incredible animals and birds and truly spectacular scenery. We were woken on the first morning by a dawn chorus that sounded nothing like an Irish dawn chorus. Jen, you would have loved it. The birds are just so different, and we gradually got used to seeing cockatoos, lorikeets, rosellas, ibis, noisy minor birds, wild turkeys, and pelicans just everywhere. We learned to recognize the laughter of the kookaburra long before we saw one. In fact, it was usually the first one to wake us up in the morning. We saw kangaroo, koalas, an echidna, water dragons, monitor lizards, and a possum without ever having to visit a zoo. And people had, of course, talked about the lifestyle, and we loved the blue skies and the sunshine, which encouraged us to be out of doors. And I'm still dreaming about those endless sandy beaches and the sound of the ocean. What we didn't expect was the mix of cultures. We spent the first week staying with Presbyterian minister and his wife, Steve and Beatty Teal. And some of you might remember that Steve came here one summer during a vacancy to preach. And their lives would be very similar to ours, fairly conservative and centred around a church community. But half an hour down the road was the town of Byron, where our son was living. Now, Byron has a very hippie vibe, and people embrace a more alternative spirituality. They brought us to a place called the Crystal Palace, which was full of Hindu statues, Buddhas, and huge crystal formations, which people believe have magical healing powers. It was actually also full of snakes, one of which slithered between Andrew's feet, and my worst nightmare almost came true, but thankfully there was no pouncing or biting involved. But Byron seemed to be full of people searching for meaning, for peace, for revelation. And then the city of Melbourne really made me think of Ephesus in the Bible, a real melting pot of different cultures and belief systems. When we arrived at the central station there, we witnessed a Christian street evangelist being physically attacked by a very distressed lady who was strongly objecting to the preaching of the gospel. And later in the day, we came across a Muslim outreach. They actually had a table displaying Bibles and Qurans, which intrigued me, and I got into a discussion, actually being videotaped at the time, about whether Jesus was the Son of God or just a Son of God, a prophet. Then we discovered that there was a Hillsong Church in Melbourne, so we went to visit that, but we missed their service. So instead we called into the Anglican Cathedral, where the choir were practicing for Evensong. But as we came out of the cathedral, a group of Sikhs were handing out free food from a van parked right outside. And the week before we visited Melbourne, there had been a terrorist attack in which a well-known cafe owner had been killed. You might have heard about that. But to me, it felt like a pretty intense spiritual battlefield. Our time in Byron coincided also with the arrival of the schoolies, that is, school leavers who were away for their end of school holiday as their school year finishes in November, December. And it was sad to see so many teenagers caught up in the culture of drinking and partying that can be so destructive and necessitated a strong police presence on the normally peaceful streets. And we also saw many homeless people whose partying had led to long-term addiction. As we negotiated our way home one evening, we noticed a couple of older men who seemed to be ministering to these people, so we asked Steve about them. He said they were probably Christian street pastors. He also told us about the Red Frog Crew, sponsored by Scripture Union, who look out for the partygoers, befriending them and making sure they get home safely. They're called Red Frogs because they use Red Frog lollipops to kind of introduce themselves to the young people. But it was good to know that Christians were active in the midst of all that chaos. So all of this gave us a lot of food for thought. We could see so many people searching spiritually and so many prepared to believe just about anything other than the gospel. And it would be tempting to just give up. The church seems to be having so little impact, and Christianity is becoming very unpopular for many reasons. However, it is important to remember that God has not given up. Far from it. God can and does reach out to people who are searching, even if they're searching in what we would consider to be the wrong places. Many instances are being reported of Jesus revealing himself through dreams to people of the Muslim faith, for instance. An article by Darren Carlson on the Gospel Coalition website in May 2018 refers to a study by Dudley Woodbury and others in 2007, in which 750 former Muslims were interviewed about their conversion to Christianity. Many of them, I think about 25%, became Christians as a result of Jesus appearing to them in dreams. Now, maybe the idea of people having dreams and visions of Jesus sounds a bit scary and is a little outside of our comfort zone, but I find it quite reassuring that God still communicates directly with people in supernatural and mysterious ways. So before we went away, Gary had actually asked me to talk to you today about the Magi. So I was thinking about them, and then I had a little kind of epiphany moment when I realized that they actually provide an excellent example of God interacting directly to lead people to himself. There is a lot of mystery surrounding their visit, but it's quite fascinating to dig a little deeper and try to answer some questions. Who were these wise men from the East? They're only mentioned in this one passage in Matthew 2, 1-12, and yet their visit is always included in the retelling of the Nativity story. So who were they, and why did they come? What is so significant about their visit, and how did they respond to Jesus? So we know that the visitors were important people who had travelled from the east, probably from Babylon, which is now Iraq. A journey across desert hills on horses or camels, probably along an established spice route recognised by archaeologists today. We know they were wealthy as they brought expensive gifts, but they were probably not themselves kings, as is often depicted. Matthew does not say how many came, and the group may well have included women, not just men. The mention of three gifts led to the tradition of the three wise men, but it was quite possibly a larger group. They are described as magi, a word of Persian origin, which is not gender specific. References to Magi appear throughout the Bible in the context of kings and pharaohs calling upon their magicians and astrologers to interpret dreams and generally advise them. These people were employed in royal courts to keep an eye out for signs and omens. Astrology was very popular, as it is today, and a keen eye was kept on the stars. We also know that they did not come immediately following the birth of Jesus. Matthew 2:11 tells us they went into the house to see the child, so the little family were no longer in the stable where Jesus was born. The fact that Herod, in his jealousy and paranoia, ordered the killing of boys up to the age of 2 indicates that he had calculated Jesus' approximate age based on the interrogation described in verse 7. So Herod called the visitors from the east to a secret meeting and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. But a really intriguing question is, how did these magi know that the Jews were expecting the birth of a king? Matthew 2 verse 2 tells us they had come looking for the king of the Jews. They said, "We saw his star when it came up in the east." There are a number of theories, but the one I found with the most convincing scriptural basis requires us to step back into Jewish history to the time of Daniel and his exile in Babylon over 500 years before the birth of Christ. Through the interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream, Daniel brought the news of the kingdom of God to the Persian people. In Daniel 2:47, we read that the king said to Daniel, "Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries." Daniel was put in a position of huge influence in Babylon for a long time, about 70 years. He introduced the Persians to his God and would have taught them about the prophecies pertaining to the Messiah. It is thought that the wise men who came looking for the king of the Jews in Jerusalem would have been awaiting his arrival, just like the Jews themselves. But their understanding was not perfect, and their knowledge of God was all mixed up with their own culture, which still had a strong emphasis on stargazing. Yet God used this to lead them to himself and into truth. As I said earlier, I find it very reassuring, as we see people looking in the wrong places for truth, that God can and does intervene, often in strangely unexpected and mysterious ways. So the fact that the Magi brought gifts fit for a king, the gold representing his royal standing, frankincense his divine birth, and myrrh his mortality, shows that they had some understanding of who Jesus was. But they expected him to be born in a palace, so made their way straight to Jerusalem, the capital city of the Jews. Herod, known as King Herod or Herod the Great, was disturbed when he heard that these visitors were asking about the birth of the King of the Jews. After all, he had been appointed King of Judea by the Romans and did not like the thought of a Jewish king leading an uprising against him. And this Herod was a particularly nasty character. He would do anything to protect his position, and we can see from Matthew's account just how devious and ruthless he could be. He lied to the Magi in verse 8, telling them, "Go and make a careful search for the child, and as soon as you find him, report to me, so that I too may go and worship him." Of course, he had no intention of doing this. His intention was to kill off a new possible rival to his leadership, even if that rival was not even 2 years old, just like he had killed members of his own family, including his own sons. But God intervened, warning the Magi not to go back to him, but to return by a different route to avoid him. Joseph was also warned in a dream to remove Jesus from harm's way, so the little family were able to flee to Egypt before Herod realized he had been outwitted and ordered the killing of all boys in Bethlehem under 2 years of age. You see, Herod really had no idea who he was dealing with. He imagined that this king of the Jews was a threat to him, a threat that he could eliminate. He did not realize that Jesus had come into the world to establish a different kind of kingdom. He did not realize that Jesus was the Son of God, coming to earth to bring peace, restoration, and redemption. He was only interested in himself. Sadly, selfishness and paranoia ruled his life, and he hardened his heart against Jesus. The Magi, on the other hand, important as they were, knew that this new king was very significant and was worthy of their worship and adoration. So they left Herod and headed towards Bethlehem, just 5 miles south of Jerusalem. We read in verses 9 and 10 that the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. You can just sense their excitement as they hurry along the road. What a scene it must have been as this colourful entourage arrived at the humble home of Mary and Joseph, descended from their mounts, and entered the little house. They saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. What an affirmation that must have been for Mary, to see these wealthy, powerful, important-looking strangers from a distant land coming into her house and bowing to worship her infant son. Surely he must be indeed be the Son of God, the long-awaited Messiah. Now the Magi are usually remembered on Epiphany Sunday, which is actually next Sunday, the 6th of January. So we're being a little bit previous here, but far be it for us Presbyterians to be bound by tradition. And the Cambridge Dictionary definition of an epiphany is a moment when you suddenly feel that you understand, or suddenly become conscious of something that is very important to you. The word epiphany comes from Greek and means manifestation. It celebrates the revelation or manifestation of God in his Son as human in Jesus Christ. The visit of the Magi showed that this revelation was for Gentiles as well as Jews. Jesus would draw all men to himself. We read that in John 12, verse 32. And the Magi were the first Gentiles to be drawn to Jesus. So presumably this was a moment of epiphany for the Magi and for Mary. So in this story we see two extremely different responses to Jesus. Herod absolutely rejects him and wants to kill him. The Magi humbly accept him, bow down and worship him, submitting to his authority. In between these two extremes are lots of other possible responses. Over the centuries, people have disdained him, ignored him, demoted him, neglected him, overlooked him, misunderstood him. As I stood on that street in Melbourne talking to that very handsome young Muslim man about who Jesus was, I realized that the crux of it all hung on the identity of Jesus. As I was racking my brains for appropriate verses from the Bible to validate my argument that Jesus was not just a prophet, another man interrupted and said, "No, Jesus is the Son of God." I decided at that point to back away and gratefully left them to it. The woman beating up the street evangelist was very angry and was actively rejecting Jesus. But people were praying over her, and it may well be that her encounter with those Christians has led to a life-changing encounter with Jesus. I hope so. The schoolies on the Gold Coast, who are doing their best to ignore Jesus, will meet him through the ministry of the Red Frogs. The young people who hold Jesus in disdain but seek fulfillment in Eastern mysticism may well encounter Jesus as they meditate. But if they do, he will continue to say to them, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." God is at work in this crazy world. It's not over yet. There's a battle going on, and we need to decide which side we are on. We all need to decide who Jesus is and how we will respond to him. Will we bow down and worship him? Will we seek forgiveness at the foot of the cross? Will we accept his authority and allow him to be Lord in our lives? Will we stand up and defend our faith? Will we continue to trust him, even in the face of persecution? Will we engage in the spiritual battle all around us and tell others about him? If we truly believe he is the Son of God, I believe we will do all these things in his strength.